Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. My thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com. Very pleased to have with us today a gentleman who I've just met by the name of Dr. Myron Brown. He's got a new book out here that is really interesting because it's called The Beekeeper, but it's not a handbook on how to start beekeeping. And we're going to learn all about that today on our Straight Talk program. But as we always do, why don't we start off first, Myron, get you to tell us a little bit about you.
I'd be delighted. Thank you. I've been in Rock Hill I'm in my 16th year here, practicing chiropractor in town. Prior to coming to Rock Hill, I was located in Spartanburg, South Carolina, where I was the provost of a chiropractic college, which means I was running an academic program and did that for 6 years. And that's how we came to South Carolina, actually. Aha. Prior to that, we practiced in Iowa for 20 years.
Oh, my God.
And so you say, oh, my God, you're right. And it's a wonderful place to live and bring up your children. However, the climate can be very rugged in Iowa. The winters, as most people know, are pretty darn cold. Mm. And what most people are not aware of is the summers get hotter than here.
That's true. You know, most people, they say, oh, it's so hot in the South. That's crazy. It's hot everywhere. And the Midwest is even hotter.
If you haven't walked through a cornfield in July in Iowa, you don't know hot. But, I mean, that's how it is. But anyway, Rock Hill's a wonderful place to be, and we chose to live here after I resigned from my position in the academic world with the chiropractic college. I was looking around for where do we go next, and I had a license to practice in South Carolina, so we looked around at a number of places in the state to start a practice, and one of them that had a wonderful practice for sale was in Somerville. My wife and I went down there on a nice July day and looked at the office, and it was a good experience to see, and would have been a nice practice to purchase. But we went out for lunch, and we walked around the city of Somerville in July, and my wife said, we can't live here. The heat and humidity was just terrible.
You did it in Charleston area.
Yeah. So anyway, but when we discovered Rock Hill, which I'd never even heard of, but there was a position available at Winthrop that my wife was highly qualified to take, and she actually started working in Rock Hill before I did.
Really?
And so while she was at work, I'd drop her off and go to the McDonald's where I could get online and look for a location to open a chiropractic office.
So the bottom line is when your wife was happy, that was it. You had to become happy.
It's pretty important.
Yeah, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. I got it.
You know, somebody was saying to me, we just celebrated our 50th anniversary in June, and a young man asked me, well, what's the secret to a long-term successful marriage? And I said, well, it's easy. You just let her have everything she wants, and you do whatever she wants to do.
Or as I say, the three rules to a successful marriage, rule number one, yes, honey. Rule number two, you're right, honey. And the most important rule, number three, it was all my fault, honey.
Yeah,
you're right. Every time I say that to my wife, she has a rather strong response to that. Yeah, okay. Well, so you found a practice to purchase or start a new one or whatever
actually,
you did.
No, we started brand new from nothing. We just found a location to go into. In fact, it was 2008, and there was an empty office over on Ebenezer Road that had been used as the Obama headquarters during that campaign season. And when I got possession of the building, there were still a lot of bumper stickers and things like that, literature that we cleared out to paint walls and get the place ready. And I remember thinking to myself, I wonder if I should save any of these things. And I thought, no, he'll never get elected because there's just too much of that. He's a black man and it's not going to happen. Huh. But you know what? I wish I'd saved a few of those things now. But anyway, we started our practice there. And one of the great things about coming to a community like this is that you have the opportunity to start things the way you think it should be done right. And so I started out. Now, if you remember 2008, and this was the latter part of the year, the economy was just going over a cliff.
Yep.
Right about that
That's
time.
About right.
So I opened this office, and it was the biggest yawn that Rock Hill ever had. He's like, so what? You're there.
Yeah, whoopee-doo.
Yeah, so I had some time on my hands in the beginning. And the first couple of weeks, I got a notice from the city that they're going to shut off my electricity for non-payment of the bill. So I thought, well, wait a minute. I know I paid the bill. So I thought, but I don't know anybody here. I think I'll go downtown with the bill and with my checkbook and make sure they know that they got the payment. So I get down to City Hall, and I went up to that window where you pay the bill, and the young lady pointed to the chairs in the hallway and said, well, have a seat there. The woman who handles delinquent accounts is going to come out and get you. And so that was the best thing could have happened, actually, because after a short while, a young lady by the name of Carol Harvey came out.
Oh, I know Carol. She's great.
She is great. And so, I explained to her that I got this shutoff notice, and I know I paid the bill. So she said, well, come on back here. And I followed her through the maze back to her little office, and we talked for a couple minutes. I said, so how do you get to meet people in Rock Hill? And she gave me the best advice anyone's ever given me. She said, Myron, you roll up your sleeves and you go to work. So I said, well, how do you go to work? And she said, well, there's some committees that need volunteers. And she said, and we got one right here, the No Room for Racism Committee. You should get on that. And there's another one, the Coalition for the Homeless. She was on both of those committees, by the way. She got me on them. I started meeting people. Pretty soon I joined the Rock Hill Toastmasters Club because I always wanted to be in a Toastmasters Club and never happened to be anywhere where there was one. So that was a great introduction to the community, and I got pretty busy pretty soon, even though we were in a rough economic moment.
It's amazing what happens when you shake hands with people and get to know them in it.
Exactly. Wow. Then I started going to the Economic Development Corporation board meetings every month as a guest, because that's an open meeting, and I just sat there and listened, and because I needed to know what's going on in the community. Pretty soon, the members were starting to notice I'm there every month. They said, why don't you just join the board? So I ended up serving 9 years on that.
Good for you.
So, I mean, it was really good to get into the community and find out what was going on.
That's it. So, from all of that, you're well established now. You get your practice is good. You got enough time on your hands to get into something else, which is writing. Have you ever written a book before?
This is the first book I've ever written.
All right. So, I love the cover. By the way, you can get this book, I would imagine, everywhere.
This is published by Warren Publishing, which has offices in Charlotte and in Rock Hill.
Ah.
And you can get it online at warrenpublishing.net, or you can go to Amazon and order it on Amazon or places like Goodreads, Barnes & Noble online.
So, okay. Yeah. The Beekeeper. It's a novel, so we know it's not about how to get started with beekeeping. Okay, good. And it's interesting because you see somebody cupping their hands and they got bees all over them. That's enough to scare the yell out of me right there. So where did this come from? Where did this idea come from?
And if you look right above where you see the hands, you'll see what looks like...
Oh, yeah.
What was the guy's name that did the old anatomy drawings?
You got me. But it's a screen printed back there. Very light. It's a skeleton.
It's anatomy.
Which is correct. What you do all the time.
That's right.
Fully with anatomy.
Exactly. So.
Wow, that was a good laugh over there. I don't know who that is.
Well, we're out in public, you know.
That's good. Hey, Tim. Anyway. There he goes. That's him. Go ahead.
So you were asking how I got started with this novel.
Yeah.
It actually goes right back to my college days when I was at a chiropractic college, Palmer College of Chiropractic in Davenport, Iowa, the original chiropractic college. And at that time, the grandson of the founder of the profession was the president of the college. Now, the profession was founded in 1895. and I started college in 1970, so we had the progeny. But he was talking in an all-school assembly about his grandfather who founded the profession, and he was talking about the great success the man had as a beekeeper long before he started the chiropractic profession. And eventually he got out of beekeeping when there was a horrible winter in the Midwest that killed all of the bees. Mm. Now, this was a huge bee enterprise. He was the most successful apiary in the whole country there in along the Mississippi River on the Illinois side of the river. And so he got into something else. He went into being a grocer, and then he discovered something called magnetic healing, which led him into the healing arts. Later on, as he learned more about being a doctor and taking care of patients, he discovered something that was not well known in those days, that the nerve system runs the body. Of course, the brain using the nerve system sure. as a communication device.
Okay.
Communications, as you know, are very important. Mm. Well, within your own body, the communication from brain to body parts is essential. So there I am as a student learning about the founding of my profession and listening to the grandson of the founder talk about his successful grandfather's apiary. It stimulated my interest. Years later, when I started practicing in Iowa, I found out that we could do a little history tour and discover where the farm was, where all these bees were being raised and all of the other horticultural things. And so we started out just as a hobby. And pretty soon, when you get into an obscure hobby, you can become an expert real easy because nobody else is looking at it.
No one knows anything about it.
And over a period of time, I learned more and more about what was going on. And I found out that the founder of the chiropractic profession was a fascinating person. He had a very unusual life, began as a Canadian, growing up on out in the woods, not too far from, in Ontario, Canada. Not too far from Montreal, left there by his family as an 11-year-old to take care of his 9-year-old brother.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is just unfathomable by my way of thinking. But then eventually they made their trek to the United States and eventually got into this being a school teacher, then getting into horticultural because school teachers weren't being paid very much. So the book is about the adventure, the life, the loves of D.D. Palmer, who founded the chiropractic profession.
So this is nonfiction?
A lot of it is nonfiction. However, let me hasten to say that it is what you would call the genre of historical fiction. While most of it happens to be true, there's a whole lot of pieces of the puzzle that simply were not available to know, and that came out of my imagination. And some of it's not, I've learned subsequently from other historians, is not 100% accurate, but the big idea is 100% accurate.
So you call this, on the cover here, a novel.
Yes.
Because it's a mixture of basically nonfiction and fiction.
Exactly. Now, besides being historical fiction, it also fits another genre called philosophical fiction. And in philosophy, there is a whole subset of philosophical study right. called philosophical fiction, where an individual writes a fiction book but uses the fiction to tell an important philosophical point. An example might be, if I ask you the question, who was the world's greatest detective, how would you answer that?
Probably say Sherlock Holmes.
Precisely. Now, when Doyle wrote that book a long time ago, he was writing a fiction book, but he was doing a philosophical teaching with that book where he was teaching about elementary, my dear Watson, that was deductive reasoning. Wow. So he was really writing about deductive reasoning, and yet it was masquerading as this mystery detective, I guess you would call him. Another good example would be George Orwell's 1984.
Oh, yeah.
That's philosophical fiction. I remember as a high school student being terrified by the idea that that might be my future, and now we're there, and it's too much of it has come true.
Shoo-wee. All right, we're going to have to take our mid-program break. Remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. And by Caporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. So, as we told you, Doctor, we do this wonderful thing here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. It's called We Feed People Like Ron Russell with fresh subs and salads, and we do it 6 days a week. The way we do it is in those white letters, and everybody who knows anything about anything in Rock Hill knows what we're about to do. But you're brand new, so here we go. At the count of three, one, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden,
garden, garden. All right, you got it. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
The food, the number 19 is the best.
When I want lunch, I come to Substation 2 because I can't remember never not coming here.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Dr. Carrie Watson, the trauma medical director at Piedmont Medical Center, says she's very proud of what's being accomplished at Piedmont.
We are able to do robotic surgery. We are a robotic center of excellence, and that's robotic surgery for general surgery like gallbladders, hernias, colon. We also have robotic urology, so that's things like kidney removals and things with your bladder. We also have robotic neurosurgery that we're doing, and that's pretty amazing. Not a lot of places have that.
Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
We know the type. You like to start early, finish late, make lemon squares, and make payments to the college fund from anywhere in the house. We know you rely on Comporium for things you rely on most, like a view of the backyard. That's just a bunny, and hundreds of channels to watch, whenever you want. So you may think of us as just your internet company, but we're more like the I didn't know they could do all that company. Comporium, always ready.
Relax this summer with a promotional rate on select travel purchases with your Founders Federal Credit Union credit card. Now through August 31st, get 6.99% APR for 6 months on qualifying purchases, including airfare, hotels, restaurants, and cruise lines. Don't let interest rates slow you down this summer. Visit foundersfcu.com/travel to learn more. On March 1st, 2025, the promotional APR reverts to the effective APRs previously disclosed. Call 800-845-1614 for details about credit costs and terms. Membership qualification required.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
The food is really good, and it's a great price.
The hot meatball subs with jalapenos.
A good deal for a delicious sandwich.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Very interesting guest today by the name of Dr. Myron Brown. He is a local chiropractor, been here about 16, 18 years. And in his free time, now that he's well-established and been on every committee there is in the city of Rock Hill, not quite, but that's pretty good, he's written this book called The Beekeeper, which has nothing to do with beekeeping. It's about basically, it's a novel. It's nonfiction, but it does have a little bit of his own fiction in there that was a beekeeper and is the founder of chiropractic who was a beekeeper. So, I mean, what did you do? All of a sudden you found this out and you just started doing all kinds of research about this guy?
Well, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, I really got inspired about it when I was a chiropractic student and heard the founder's grandson talking about how his grandfather had been such a successful beekeeper to where it was even one of the family jokes was he had taken a railroad carload of honey from Iowa to from Illinois at that time to New York City, sold the honey, and came back with what he called a big tumor growing in his top pocket of his shirt. And then he'd pull out the tumor, and it was a big roll of currency.
$100 bills.
He was so proud that he brought back $3,000. And, you know, back in 1870, $3,000 was a substantial amount of money. But I was just so interested at the man's life and how he ended up going from such a humble start into becoming a man who treated sick people and then started this whole new thing that nobody had done before. You know, and put context to this, the context of the late 1800s, when people used to think that if you were sick, you had bad blood. If you were going to get treated, your physician might let the blood by cutting a vessel open and draining the bad blood out of the body.
Yeah, that's right.
Even up until the early 1900s, they were still putting leeches on the skin to draw out the bad blood. It was kind of superstitious, but it was believed that the blood system and the heart ran everything in the body. Later on, we started to understand that there was the brain was really responsible for regulating function, and that it had this spinal cord and nerve system, the wiring system of the body. And he was exploring that when other doctors were not looking at that very much. So he started to reason that if one person is healthy and another person is not, they're living in the same building, eating at the same table, doing the same work, why is one person get sick and another stay well? And that led him to start to understand that one's body was functioning at a high level and the other was not. It wasn't just the bad germs that jumped on you, in other words.
All right, so you had this wealth of information.
Exactly.
And you said, I got to write a book about this because this guy is so fascinating.
Well, you know.
What did your wife say? Did she say you're nuts?
Well, she was very supportive about the idea. And what I found was, you know, I worked at the office during the day. And if we're together in the evening and she's watching a British television show that I couldn't understand the accent, I'd go upstairs on the computer and I'd do some writing. But over a period of time, the reason why I wrote this story of historical fiction was to get the idea out to the world, people that are not chiropractors and not particularly interested in chiropractic, to find out that there's something way more than sore necks, stiff backs, and headaches that most people don't understand how to use chiropractic or what it's for. And it's for a person's life and well-being, for their health, for much more than just how you feel, but for how you're functioning. And this is what Palmer discovered. The very first person who got a chiropractic adjustment under the hands of D.D. Palmer, and this is on page one of the book, was a man who had been deaf for 17 years, could not hear. And so the man had been a janitor in D.D. Palmer's building where he was working as a doctor. And he said, Harvey, how long have you been deaf? And the man said, 17 years. And he said, well, what brought it on? How come you're deaf? And he said, you know, I've been to all the doctors between Chicago and here in Davenport, Iowa, and nobody's ever asked me why I was deaf. They did things to treat my ears. They did a lot of things, but nothing ever helped. You're the first one that asked why I'm deaf, and I'll tell you the answer is I don't know. But what he did say is I know when it happens. He said, one day I was scrubbing with a brush down on the floor in the corner of a room, and I felt something snap in my neck. And it was like somebody put mufflers over my ears at that point in time. And Dr. Palmer, who was already looking at the nerve system and the relationship to the brain, said, well, wait a minute. If something went goofy in your neck, let's look at your neck. And so he looked at it, and he said, Harvey, you got a bump back there. Did it hurt when I touch it? And he said, well, never hurt till you touched it. You know. But he said, well, let's examine that further. And this was an experiment. The very first chiropractic adjustment was on this man deaf for 17 years. And he adjusted him, and Harvey immediately started to get his hearing back. So you think of chiropractic as about a stiff neck or a sore back. Well, it really isn't. Now, what do you suppose Dr. Palmer thought after curing the deaf?
I think I got something here.
He did. And what he thought was he found the cure for deafness. So the first thing he did after that was said, well, let me find me another deaf guy. You know? And what he did is he adjusted that next man because he also found something was wrong in his spine, and nothing happened. He did not cure deafness in the second guy. And he tried it for a while, and after a while, like any honest physician would do, he said, I don't think it's working. We better give up on this. And the guy said, well, that's all right with you, but, you know, ever since you did that, the palpitations in my heart have stopped happening. And he said, I want to stay under care. So what he discovered was something changes in a person's health when you get rid of interference between the brain and the body. And that's what chiropractic really is about. And yet today, most people think you go there if your back hurts, but it's the least important thing we do. And that's why I wrote the book. I wanted people to know the more important stuff.
All right, so how long did it take you to write this book?
I'm embarrassed to have to tell you, I started writing it more than 10 years ago. And here's what happened.
Well, we only have about 3 minutes left in the show.
Okay, I'll make it fast.
All right.
Like anyone who, I'm not a writer and wasn't trying to be, but I wanted the story out. So I took the book, actually it was only 30 pages at the time, to my sister. My sister was a professor of communications at Rider University. And I said, would you look at this? And she looked at it and gave me some honest information. It just crushed me to the core because it was so poorly done at that time that I left it for several years. And only about 3 years ago got very serious about finishing it up. And so that's where we got to where we are now.
Now, what's interesting to me is most of the local authors that I've talked to, they've had to self-publish their books. You, however, have got a publication company that's you've hooked up with. How did that come about?
Well, like everyone else, I submitted to regular publishing houses as well. And in publishing today, the majority of new people are doing self-published because if you're not Stephen King, the publishing houses may not want to listen to you.
Yeah.
And then there is also a type called a hybrid publisher. So the traditional publishing houses were not responsive to me. But this hybrid one, Warren Publications, where the author does share some of the cost of publishing, but you have a high-quality professional level of layout, formatting, editing. The editors were wonderful. And while I shared the cost of getting that done, they also pay the author a higher amount of commission on books that are sold.
Good for you.
So it's a great relationship for somebody who's a no-name like myself to be able to get something published. Of course, they don't accept everything that's submitted to them either.
And you told me, what, about 10%?
I'm not sure if they said less than 10% is what they'll actually accept.
Sure. All right, so this has been out. How long?
Late June. Yes.
They're flying off the shelves?
I don't know if they're flying, but we've got a few of them out there.
Okay. You say this is only there's a subsequent follow-up book to this, volume two?
Yeah, the original book was just too long, and so right now they divided it.
40 pages that was not worth a doggone in your sister's opinion. Yes. Now we got two volumes.
Right. Well, it had 460 pages when I submitted, which comes out to a whole lot more when you format it. So, yeah, it was too long for one book. And so right now we're working on the editing for next year's release of Volume 2.
All right. So you've already written Volume 2.
It's
now,
written.
Now the editors are tearing it apart.
Yeah, they're ruthless.
Well, it sounds very interesting. It's called The Beekeeper. And you can find it, online just about anywhere. I'm sure anywhere, right? Find it in local bookstores around here as well?
I don't know of any bookstores that have it, but warrenpublications.net is one.
Okay.
And Amazon is another.
All right.
So,
what else do you need? You got it. Well, Myron, I've enjoyed this conversation.
It's been my pleasure.
It's been a hoot to hear all this behind this book. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, relax here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. All right, as we told you before, we do this magic here at Substation 2. It's called Fresh Subs and Salads, and we do it 6 days a week. The reason it's only six and not seven is I can't get this guy to open up on the seventh day. Oh, whoops, he just put his head out here. Okay, so let's tell everybody what the heck we do here at Substation 2, 6 days a week, not seven. It's Fresh Subs and Salads. How we do it at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice. Garden.
Ah, much better, Myron. Well done. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. We will see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.